Hi, John.
Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
Oh, just a dandy.
Just dandy. There's some irony in that answer, I think, because you are a staffer, or were a staffer at the New Republic. You'll have to explain to me your exact status, but you were, as of yesterday, senior editor at the New Republic. There has been a lot of upheaval at the New Republic that have left a lot of people to resign. I'm going to ask you about your status. And it's funny, the last time I saw you was 2 weeks ago at the New Republic's 100th birthday party. In fact, we were seated at the same table. The high status table, as you
Yes.
recall, right, John?
Yeah, that's right.
That was the one. And
In the
the first,
foyer of the
what's that?
in the foyer, right
Yeah,
next to
we
the
weren't
men's
that
room.
far out. In the the first time I met you, I don't know if you recall, was at the New Republic in 1988. I had just gone to work there under Mike Kinsley. You were not yet on staff, but you were writing things for the New Republic. And then I stayed there while I was, I was acting editor for 7 months while Mike was on sabbatical later that year. And I hung around through much of the 90s. So, and you've been there a long time now. So we've both kind of lived and breathed the New Republic for a fair amount of time. But I have, it's been a while since I was actually a part of the operation. So, for starters, I guess if there's anyone out there who was like not on Twitter, yesterday, or for whatever reason does not know the story, basically, Frank Foer, the editor, Leon Wieseltier, longtime literary editor, and one-man institution, resigned. It was later reported that Frank had earlier learned that his replacement had already been hired, and that led to the resignation. Whatever. Certainly, there were forebodings at the 100th birthday party, right? Everyone was saying, there was a sense that something was afoot because Chris Hughes, who had bought the magazine 2 years ago, had hired this new guy from Yahoo, Guy Vidra, and it's the sense was, hey, the status quo is not going to remain for
Ever
long.
since we got a memo from Chris Hughes, oh, maybe a few months ago, saying that this guy had not only been hired but was going to be the CEO and would have responsibility for commercial, financial, and editorial practices of the magazine, that was the red
So he
flag.
wasn't just a publisher.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly. So at that point, it was pretty clear that something was afoot.
What is your status, first of all? You're leaving, I gather.
Yes, I'm leaving. I'm no longer a senior editor, as far as I know.
And this is voluntary.
Yes.
And do you want to elaborate on your on the reasons?
No, I mean it's obvious. It's a I it's in solidarity with my colleagues, and it's a protest against Frank and Leon. Leon really was going to be out the door anyway, I think, with Frank. I think that was pretty clear. And
You mean Leon, if Frank went, Leon was going to go, or Leon was doomed to begin with, or what?
well, again, I told you this, that I work at home, so I don't know all the inside story,
Yeah.
but I'll just say that at the very first lunch, a meeting I had with Chris Hughes about 2 months or a month after he bought the thing, I found myself defending Leon and his section. So I would say that it's
That's hard work, man. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We love Leon. Go ahead.
yeah, I'm saying that from that I believe he was doomed. Whether he really was or not, I'll have to leave to people who know better what was inside Chris Hughes' head.
Yeah, but that was 2 years ago. So he hung on a while for sure, and he put out a lot of the kinds of reviews I think he would have wanted to put out in the meanwhile.
10 issues a year doesn't leave much for a review section, so that's.
Which is the other news. They're moving. They had already gone from weekly, which it was when you and I met, to 20 issues a week, and now they're going to 10 is the other big news. So it's clearly it's increasingly a web operation. I don't think you can really blame them, in a certain sense, for making it predominantly a web operation. I mean, you may have noticed there's this thing called the internet, and it's you cannot have influence. If you want to have influence, you really have to have a pretty energetic web operation. So that part alone.
Yes, I don't think that the going from print to web is the key issue. I think that that was going to happen inevitably, and that most people on the magazine recognize that. It might not happen next year, it might happen in a few years, but I think that's going to be true for all publications. You know, a few exceptions, but yes, that was definitely the fate. That's not the, for me, that's not the central consideration.
Yeah. And so what is the central consideration?
Well, the New Republic is one of these small political magazines. It's 100 years old. The Nation is older. National Review, whose purpose is to change America and change history. And not simply to publish whatever comes in or whatever attracts the most attention, but through discussion of the editors and through the writing and reporting to change America in certain ways. It was a political magazine. The people who owned the magazine, beginning with Willard Strait and his wife Dorothy Strait, 1914, were all committed to this idea. So they were willing to put up with deficits. They never saw it as a profit-making enterprise. Mm-hmm. Once you abandon that, once you start thinking of the New Republic as a web center or a media center or even as a general interest magazine with no particular political presentation, and once you start thinking of it as something that's going to make a profit, then really that core purpose of the magazine is out the window. I myself think that it's very important to have magazines, publications, whether they're print or web, that have that kind of singular purpose. It doesn't mean that everything says the same. You know, one of the key things that happened when Chris Hughes came on was we stopped having editorials.
Right.
When you have editorials, one of the virtues of that is it forces the editors, of course, to argue about what they think, but it also allows you to present other ideas in the magazine that are completely at odds with the editorial. So it's a very important part of a political magazine. Once that was dropped, I saw that, you know, as the path to really changing the whole nature of the enterprise.
Yeah. And early on, he disclosed that part, right? I mean, he said... didn't he say he wanted the magazine to not actually have an ideology, or am I misremembering?
There was something like that. It was more ambiguous. He said he wanted it to be liberal, or encourage liberal ideas, but not to have an ideology. You can parse that however you want. I've had difficulty understanding some of these heavily internet Silicon Valley-laid discussions of you know, what we should become or should have become. As it is. And I think that was a point where it may be that Chris Hughes was trying to reassure us that he wasn't going to change the original New Republic, but that the die was already cast and he really did not have that much interest in having a political magazine.
Yeah, I had coffee with him shortly after he bought the magazine, and I got the sense he just himself did not have a very strong ideology or you know, highly specific ideology. Maybe he did have some kind of high aspirations, as I recall, about, you know, kind of the civil presentation of arguments and civil discourse, and you know, if I'm remembering correctly, there's something to be said for that. You know, the
yes. He also thought campaign finance was a key issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had, after all, had been Obama's web director in 2008.
Right.
The first big interview in the launch issue was with Obama. So there were, there were signs that from which one could take hope that the magazine was going to retain its liberal progressive presence.
Mm-hmm.
And not become simply, again, a kind of media center.
And in fact, I think you have expressed happiness in the intervening 2 years that, at least on the foreign policy side, some space had been opened up under his ownership, right? Like, for example, for your views. I mean,
that's what the no ideology, that was
right.
The positive part of it, that there was no, right. No under Marty Peretz, it really was very restrictive in terms of what you could say about the Middle Israel and in general the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a problem for me.
Yeah. Now, and speaking of Marty, I mean, Marty was always, when he was, you know, he was the owner when I was there, he was always trying to find ways to make money. He'd love to have gotten into the black. I think he kind of aspired to. Sometimes he wasn't terribly far from that, but, you know, they courted advertisers. They did their best. So, I mean, owners tend to want to minimize their losses at least. I guess my question is it clear now that Chris Hughes really wants to turn this into a money-making operation, in which case I agree with you that, you know, it's kind of bye-bye idealism, or is it more a case of wanting to minimize losses and possibly expand influence by increasing traffic? That would be the charitable interpretation.
I'll just tell you what my discussions with him were. When he took over the magazine, when he bought it in 2012, we had a discussion, and he said then that he was not interested in making a profit as such. He understood that the magazine had always run at a loss.
Right.
I think there was only 1 year in the 80s where we broke even. But that he wanted to reduce the losses. It's what you said. That was the goal. I can't remember what the exact figures were, but we were hemorrhaging money in the early 2000s before he took over, and he wanted to reduce that, and I think that's a reasonable goal. After the presentation that Guy Vidra, the CEO, made, that seemed to suggest again that we were moving away from any hint of the old New Republic towards something entirely new.
This was his in-house presentation to the staff when he first showed up, what, a couple of months ago or something?
Yes, October or something like that. I asked Chris Hughes specifically, do you now see this as a profit-making enterprise? And he said yes. And my impression at that point was that the nature of it had really changed. Mm-hmm. And he said so himself, and they said that they were going to change. This was an important transition point. You know, and I think the transition point was away from having a political magazine that had certain idealistic goals to something that was much more mundane and typical in America and proliferates. Mm-hmm. I think the political role is very important. I think the journals like that, we need them. Political parties don't serve that purpose in America. We need people who can cohere ideas, present things in a way that influence the direction of the country. So anyway, that's I think what's being lost.
And what was the Guy Vidra presentation like? I gather that's the thing that's been described in the reporting in which he said, let's...
Oh, 1 second. I'm getting these. Well, I'll turn off my phone here.
I like that ringtone.
Believe it or not, the phone has been going. That's a train whistle.
I know. I like it. I want to download that. It's been much reported the Guy Vidra presentation where he's been quoted as saying, "Let's break shit."
Right.
Did he say that?
Yes.
Which meant what? That's like Silicon Valley. Let's be disruptive. Talk. Is that it?
I really don't know what he was talking about. Maybe he was talking about what's happened. I mean, it was had these the outlines on the bulletin board, and there was invest, innovate, metabolism, data driven, and these were the core pillars of the New Republic. And he talked about things.
Yeah, those come from Herbert Crowley, right?
What?
Those four come from Herbert Crowley, right?
Yeah, exactly. And cross-functional collaboration. I mean, you know, I change the DNA. The thing about being a war chief CEO, people have mentioned that. So, I thought it was pretty hard to follow. Vice and BuzzFeed both came up, were both cited positively.
Well, Vice, there's something to be said for Vice, actually, but and occasionally maybe for BuzzFeed. But go ahead, continue.
No, that's I gave you. You know, I gave
those are your notes.
Yeah.
And when he went war, he meant doing war with rival publications. Is that it? The war for traffic.
Don't ask me. You'll have to do a blogging heads with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's invited. They're all invited. That was as of 2 months ago. So it was kind of clear what was going on. You know, Chris Hughes is still saying all these, you know, these things about vowing to preserve the essence of the New Republic. You seem to think there's no chance of that.
Oh my gosh, let me do this.
I prefer the train whistle.
I know. Sit, I'm on TV, bye.
You should have said, I'm on fake TV.
Yeah, I know.
Because
I,
on real TV, they would have edited that part out.
I know, but that's the TV part is, it's easier to, it's quicker to say TV than fake TV. You take more thought.
Yeah. So what's going to, do you know how many people have officially said they are resigning at this point?
I don't have the numbers.
You don't. You know of specific people aside from Frank and Leon, right?
Right.
Well, Ryan Lizza did it on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Lest anyone miss it. I don't know who else.
Who else is
has resigned? Do you know of anyone else who has resigned for sure? Aren't there going to be a bunch?
A lot of the senior editors.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me doing lists. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. but anybody can go look at it. It's all over the media.
Yeah.
About seven or eight, mm-hmm. and about 15 contributing editors.
Yeah, and then there's a letter going around that. They're trying to gather signatures for.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, okay. Do you think there's a chance? I mean, here is what I would think would be the optimistic scenario, is that all of this blowback, you know, and there has been blowback. I mean, I would say by and large, certainly the media narrative has been on the kind of Frank and Leon side, right? And
right.
Your side, I guess. Although those two aren't exactly the same, and in fact that has led. I think Chris Hughes issued a statement today or something. I saw a little statement reassuring people. Guy Vidra hastened to say that he wasn't really moving the magazine from Washington to New York, which had been reported. There was still going to be, you know, they're trying to reassure people. They sense that there's quite a bit of unrest and blowback. I guess the optimistic scenario would be that the blowback will reinforce any tendency to want to, preserve the place as a forum for serious ideas, serious long form reporting, and then if they also have this huge traffic generation machine, then maybe that stuff would get more attention than it might have otherwise gotten. That's the optimistic scenario.
We'll see. We'll see who they get to write for them.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, you have to think about what was the problem with Frank Foer as an editor, and why was it necessary to get rid of him? Again, that's exactly the kind of thing that he was doing. The web was doing that stuff. So, again, I think that there's a problem in the sense that the enterprise itself was not making a profit. I'm not sure if there's an answer to that. I don't think New Republic plus profit I don't think New Republic equals profit. I don't think those belong in the same sets. So, I think that that's what really in the end led to the crisis at the magazine.
Just the decision to try to actually make money as opposed to narrowing your losses.
As far as I can tell, I don't see any other reason to get rid of Frank.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like, you know, I'm not in Washington, but it seemed like some of the pieces were getting a certain amount of attention.
That's correct.
And Frank is very good at kind of long-form narrative stuff.
And so were the other editors.
Yeah. Now, that is, it's an interesting question, is the New Republic's identity over the years. When Mike Kinsley was there, which I would say was probably the acme of the magazine's influence in Washington, possibly partly because after a certain point, magazines and things could no longer have in Washington the kind of influence they had had, possibly because of the way the media landscape changed. But when I was there in the late 80s and early 90s, you know, when Mike was there in the late 80s, I mean, the New Republic was the magazine in Washington. If you wanted to get your phone call returned from somebody, the best place to be affiliated with was the New Republic, or maybe the Washington Post in a different sense, but among magazines, magazines of ideas, it was that.
So where is this going, Bob?
Well, it was a different magazine then. I mean, it's not as if the New Republic has always been this one thing, and suddenly Chris Hughes came along and spoiled the party. Mike's magazine was very different from Frank's magazine. Mike was not so much into narrative, long-form narrative. He was into short analytical pieces.
I'm going to grant you that, again, in 2012 or whenever it was when we stopped having editorials, that was a big decision. Mm-hmm. That was important. That meant that staff meetings were, you know, I used to always go with trepidation because usually I was a dissenter on foreign policy stuff. So you'd go in there with armed for Dharma combat, you know, because the first part of the meeting was going to be, what are we going to say about issue X? Now it became sort of, what's an interesting take on subject X, mm-hmm. which is a lot different. I think Frank's magazine was different, but I think, again, that was the influence of Hughes and what he wanted in terms of, you know, what you described again, which I'm still not sure exactly what it means about not liking ideology. It did change. The big times for the magazine were the Wilson era.
Yeah.
I hate to go back all the way to then.
Well, you are actually something of an historian of the magazine. You've written a lot of stuff about
the
that.
The 30s, the Kennedy era, also very important. Uh-huh. And the 80s. And the reason we were important in the 80s, I think, was because of Marty's peculiarities as going from a liberal to neoconservative, especially on foreign policy. So it put us sort of in the middle of all these debates about the Contras and nuclear treaties, relations with Russia. We became, at that point, it was the sort of the saying was, even the New Republic thinks X, meaning even the liberal New Republic thinks that we should go to Nicaragua and support.
Right. Well, I mean, a cynic would say, well, let me say two things. First of all, I think we should not underplay Mike Kinsley's role. Marty Peretz, you're right. The tension between him and Mike created an interesting magazine.
Yes, it had.
But Mike's sensibility was so essential. First of all, his sheer intellect, his ability, his economy of expression and of argument, his sense for the zeitgeist. It was just a great magazine, and he played a large role. Although I grant you a kind of weird synergy between him and Marty was a big part of it.
It was the same. You're leaving out Rick Hertzberg, and Rick and Mike used to alternate as editors, and they both had strengths.
Yeah,
but they both brought what you're talking about, which was again this weird tension between liberalism, domestic liberalism. Nascent or emerging neoconservatism in foreign policy. So the magazine became a kind of center of debate in Washington. And, Republicans would talk to us as well as Democrats. I remember I was doing a Brent Scowcroft profile.
Mm-hmm.
And I called them up and they said, come in, we'll just spend the whole morning with you, and you can see him and you can see Richard Haass. You know, that did not happen in other eras. So
right.
We were in this peculiar place then where we did have a lot of influence.
And speaking of Rick Hertzberg, he has in this 100th anniversary issue that we got at the 100th birthday party, he has a great piece about the good old days. And, I don't know if you noticed this. There's this weird feature of this magazine that you probably didn't notice, but it certainly caught my attention. Did you see the three old New Republic covers they printed up front?
No.
I
saw them, but I didn't know.
Okay, so here's the first one ever.
Yeah.
Makes sense. And then the second, number two, is this one from the impeachment years. The first one is a 1988 cover story.
Hey, look at that!
Written by yours truly. And I have no, it just doesn't seem to fit in. I have no explanation for why this happened. So I think maybe I should thank Frank for that. I think, I don't know. But
I think so, given the reviews of your last book in the magazine, I think that...
Maybe I already got kind of a makeup call in the sense that I was allowed to actually reply in the magazine.
Yeah.
Now, if I were a more petty person, this would lead to a whole discussion of Leon Wieseltier's back of the book and its governing philosophy, having had my last book trashed by someone he assigned to do that. But you know what? We're not going there, John.
And I also have found over the years it's one of the most interesting parts of the magazine. I mean, I don't read a lot of the stuff, but sometimes he'll have stuff that's just sensational. I am a defender, and I have been, of the back of the book.
Well, certainly, I mean, in the ecosystem of serious analysis in, like, the humanities in particular, you know, that's not a very big ecosystem in this country, and it just got a little smaller.
And it's getting smaller.
Yeah.
That's right.
But what I was going to say, you know, this even the liberal New Republic thing, right?
Right.
Now, the cynical view of the New Republic for much of the last several decades, certainly since Marty bought it, is that, like, that was its whole function, right? Was to have the appear to be perceived as a liberal magazine so that a right-wing foreign policy could be sold, and people would say even the liberal New Republic wants to bomb all countries other than the United States. Is that too cynical?
I don't think that's what Marty was up to. I think that, in effect, that we did serve that purpose, and it was an unfortunate one, and not one that I supported myself.
Were you there when we had the Contras for lunch?
Yeah, I think I was. I was there when the Nicaraguans came. There was a lunch with the people who ended up the publishers.
I think that was later. And was that Violeto Chamorro or whatever? Or was
yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
I think that was separate from the Contras lunch.
Okay.
But, yeah, well, maybe you're too, maybe I'm being too cynical, but, I have to say, I have, as a general rule, not been a big fan of the foreign policy, analysis and reporting.
These publications, you know, a National Review is the same way. They go through periods, they remain sort of where they are, and all of a sudden they'll hit it. They'll hit this particular juncture of politics and policy, and they'll become enormously influential. And the thing is, you have to maintain them in order for that to happen. So, you know, there's dead periods, and then there's live periods. And that's pretty much been history of the magazine.
And it's, moments pass, you know. I mean, Reagan was the perfect time for Mike Kinsley to be editor. And that wasn't going to last forever. And then George Bush, the first George Bush, was okay, but that foil, the ideological foil for, you know, because Mike was very, like, market savvy. He had an appreciation for value, for plausible conservative ideas about the economy. And yet, you know, so he was just perfect. But moments pass and, like, media landscapes change. And I don't think it's been possible over the last few years for there to be something that is in Washington what the New Republic was at that time. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can imagine it. You know, Politico has become a thing, but it has no consistent ideological influence.
Of the last 20 years, I'd say the Weekly Standard is a good example of a magazine that had a lot of influence. I don't know. I wouldn't say what it now. I think National Review has been revived. Like it or not, I think that Lowry revived it, gave it a real influence in Republican and conservative politics, and they play both ends.
Where do they get their money, by the way? Do we know?
I don't know. I haven't.
It's a fascinating question to me. The Standard gets it from Rupert Murdoch, right?
No more.
No more? Where do they get it?
I don't know, Bob.
Just Bill Kristol fundraising?
I think Murdoch's no longer funds it. But I'm not sure. Again, that's not an area I could.
But the moral of those stories is consistent with your view. I mean, those cases are consistent with your view that if you want to have influence, it helps to be willing to lose money.
I mean, you know what? A funny example is the American Conservative, which Pat Buchanan started. Very quirky publication.
Mm-hmm.
It's had its own influence too. Foreign policy, realism, things like that. They hit it. Magazines hit it, but you have to have magazines like that. If your world consists simply of general interest magazines, self-help magazines, or whatever, a lot of the political discussion in America is going to be deficient. It's going to be lacking. That's anyway, that's my shtick.
The national interest, I think, is also kind of perked up in terms of realist outlets.
Under Jacob.
Yeah.
And I should disclose, right?
You should disclose what?
That he's a friend of mine, yeah.
He's a friend
of mine. I'm prejudiced in his favor.
He's a friend. I guess I would, is there anything else? I do have this note of optimism to close on, but I've already,
we should be optimistic. It's just that it's hard for me because I'm in the middle of it. I'm in the, you know, I just got off the ship. So it's
the note of optimism is just that if you wanted to have influence in this modern world, you actually would build a huge web operation and have cat pictures and stuff, but you would insert in it serious stuff of a kind you wanted and take advantage of the traffic. I'm not aware of anybody who's done that. And of course, there's some trade-offs there. I mean, you got to preserve some gravitas, but
it's hard to do that. I mean, I worked for GQ for 7 years doing political profiles, and you know, so I do serious stuff in the middle of things that were intended for all these narcissistic guys looking in the mirror. And it seemed tokenism to me. So it's hard to do what you're describing.
Yeah, it is. And it is.
We just need. It's sorry to say, we need rich people who want to support a certain politics and are willing to take a loss and support magazines like it. The alternative is the government, and I'm not sure how that's going to work. But in some countries, that's, you know, Germany, think tanks are political party operations. I mean, there's ways you do it, but
we haven't found the rich people.
No, there used to exist. I'm not sure if this generation from Silicon Valley is the answer.
They don't seem interested, certainly in the realm of foreign policy. I think the left, in terms of money behind publications, I think the left is probably as outgunned as it has ever been on foreign policy. It's overwhelming. And I mean to include think tanks in Washington, right?
Yeah.
If you look at the highly ideological foreign policy think tanks, or think tanks with a highly ideological foreign policy position, the energetic ones, it seems to me overwhelmingly on the right. And then you've got this kind of, you know, what passes for liberal is like Brookings, where everyone there supports the Iraq war. That's the definition of liberalism these days.
Yeah, I see it on the domestic side more, the proliferation of a movement in the on Republicans and the right, of movement organizations, political blogs, all this stuff. I think outnumbers the left and the liberal side, and again, losing the New Republic to that cause is going to be a big loss.
Yeah. I better go make some money so that I can be the savior of.
You got to go write your book. That's what you have to do.
Yeah, that should generate enough money for me to buy a magazine or two. Okay, well, thank you, John. Nothing else you want to add?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, well, I guess you don't know what you're going to do next, although probably write another book would be part of it.
I have to figure out what it's about. I'm thinking about Buddhist psychology.
That's taken, bud. All right, thanks.
Bye.
See you.